Well, good morning.
Morning.
At least I think it's morning. We're going to have some folks up here on the stage in a little while that just got back from Asia. Well, it's Thursday night, or was it Friday morning? I forget exactly when we got back, but we're all time zone challenged, and so we're going to be counting on you as we share our testimonies to, to just kind of wake us up if we happen to doze off. We're hoping that won't happen, but we'll work together, I trust. That song makes my heart bleed. This is happening in so many areas in the church. The church has lost its focus, and we don't know where we're headed. We don't know why we're here in this world, and so we end up using one another as project points. You know, there's a world out there to be reached, but since I've lost that vision, now I'm forced to just kind of try to fix you, and I don't know how you feel about it when I go to church and somebody tries to fix me. I'm not sure how to, I'm just saying. But I wonder if you have a sense this morning for who you are in that scenario that we just sang about. Are you one of the dancers? Are you one of the poets? Are you one of the warriors? Are you one of the young? Are you one of the old? What is it that you're contributing? What part are you playing? Well, this morning we're going to have, actually, they're making their way up even as I speak. There they are. I knew sooner or later they would stand up. We've got some young ones. We've got some old ones. We've got some poets here. We have some dancers. We have some folks I just can't say enough about this team that you sent. And so part of what we want to do this morning is say thank you to those of you who paid $180 for a plate full of cookies a few weeks ago during Freedom Splash that made it possible for this group to go. I've worked with a lot of teams, and this one is right on top with the very best of them in terms of attitude. Some of the things we ask them to do, I don't know how much they'll share, but some of the things that we asked them to do were way over the top, and they responded with wonderful hearts and great attitudes. And we even missed lunch a couple of days just because we couldn't figure out any way to get it to them, and even that, they responded with, I just can't say enough good about these folks. We hit the ground running when we first arrived, and we didn't let up. We ran the whole time that we were there until finally we went to bed at midnight the last night and then got up at 4 the next morning and made our way to the airport to make our way back here. I love that because I get to say what missionaries so often say. This is a picture of the place where we were. You just can't see it. That's what. Remember those old slideshows that missionaries used to show, and they'd say there's a fella. You really can't see him, but he's standing right behind that tree. I promise he is. Anyway, that's kind of what we have going on here. This is the island of Luzon, the extended island of Luzon, which is the northern part, the most northern island, the big island up north. There's another big island down south called Mindanao. The Visayas or Cebu area is in between, but we landed here in the city of Manila, and let's look at that next slide because that'll give you some perspective. I'll move over here because it's a little clearer. I think we landed in the city of Manila, and it must have been 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock by the time we were actually in the hotel, and then we headed north, right up there into a very remote area. This is where the Bukolot call home, still on the island of Luzon, but north. It's about 150 miles up there. And this is where the group of missionaries came from, and that's why we wanted to see that. The coffee plantation is also there. We were there for, I don't remember if it was 2 days or 2 years, but it was quite a long time. We ended up doing some time with language study and just playing with some things and meeting some absolutely awesome people, a group of people who used to have to take a head in order to get married and who are now sending out missionaries. We made our way back down to the city of Manila, and from Manila we flew. We were there overnight in the smallest hotel rooms I've ever stayed in, but you have to try to picture Jason laying on a bed that's about 4 feet long, it felt like, yeah. And And there is a verse in Isaiah chapter 20, verse 28, that we kind of keyed off of. It became a theme verse for us, where it says, it actually says, the bed is too short to stretch out on, the blanket is too narrow to wrap around you. That, you could look it up. It really says that. And that was the one that spoke to our hearts the most. The next morning, after pretending to sleep in that little tiny hotel, we flew from Manila down to Iriga, which is a city on the southern end of where the Agta call home. There are about 80,000 people here in this area that are unreached with the gospel, or at least were until the Bukolot missionaries who came from up here. It's about a 24-hour bus ride down to Iriga. Who came from up there began ministering to those people. And we went there to work with the Bukolot people, to serve them. In fact, that's the way I described it to one of the men when we were chatting, a man named Mel. We were chatting one evening, and I reminded him that we had come to serve them, that that's why we were there. This is your work and your ministry, and we've come here to serve you. And it was a great moment, because he looked at me and he said, "Uncle, that is not the way I see it." I said, well, how would we describe it? And he said, God is using you to make it possible for God to use us. Huh? God is using you to make it possible for God to use us. It was a truly beautiful moment standing there talking to Mel. The basic area that we went to, the training center, is right there. And so we traveled by van. We were kind of a little squished in the vans, and everywhere we went, we were just kind of squished, because they were not made for people my size, never mind Jason. And never mind Jason. He's got something to say. We traveled from there up into this area here, which is where there were two different kinds of works going on. One morning, Sunday morning, we were actually in a church where there was vibrant worship, and a Mangyan tribal man from the island of... I did that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Can you go back? Can you? There. Thank you. That was entirely my fault. Where a tribal man who comes from the island of Mindoro actually is a pastor there in that church, working together with the Bukolot. And so we were in places where there was all kinds of gospel opportunity, where people had heard the good news, were part of church, that were developing their own leadership. And then at the end of the time, we made our way back up to Naga and had some fun while we were there. But every bit of the travel, 4 days we were out in villages, 2 of those days it rained pretty much all day. There were tropical depressions all around us. And, well, I'm going to leave it to folks to tell the story. They're all going to stand up here together and encourage one another, you know, in case you're as nervous as I am right now. But... They want to talk to us about their experience while they were there, and Jason is going to come up first and talk to us about his experience with the early church and our time together.
Thanks, Jay. First, we just want to say thank you so much for allowing us to go on this trip. It was a special trip, getting to go with my 2 oldest girls, which was awesome, and this group of people behind me. It was a amazing trip. We don't have enough time today. We could literally be here all day telling you stories. So as we were trying to decide, as we were talking about, you know, what spoke to you the most, it was so hard. I know I speak for everybody. It was so hard to pick out one thing to share with you guys today. But we're going to do that. We're going to attempt to do that. But I just want to say thank you. I know a lot of you gave money. I know a lot of you were here praying, and it wasn't just us that were there. It was you guys. And so we all thank you from the bottom of our hearts for allowing us, for choosing us to go and share and to be the hands and feet of this church in Jesus. So it was an amazing time. If you look up here, this is a picture. We're each going to be sharing a picture. It was hard to pick... I don't know how many pictures were taken, but there were thousands of pictures. So to pick one and to kind of, this is us getting ready to cross one of the bridges as we were going. Obviously, we didn't drive across it, although some people drove mopeds across it, which was scary just to watch them. But this is what most of our travel was like, at least once we got to the spots where we needed to be. Then we had three different teams that would go out and share the good news. And the reason I picked this picture was because as we're walking from village to village and from house to house, you couldn't help but just think about what it must have been like in the first century, what it had to have been like for Peter and Paul and those guys to be taking the good news and sharing it in each of the towns. And to be able to actually be doing that. And literally we would walk up and we would walk into a house, and we had interpreters. Obviously none of us spoke Tagalog or any of the languages there, and just ask them, you know, just tell them why we were here and let them know that, you know, just try to make small talk and have an opportunity then to share our stories and to share why we were there. And it just hit home so hard as a couple of years we walked through the book of Acts and thinking about, you know, why don't we do that here? You know, we all gave our testimonies all day long, every day, which was amazing. But you think about all the opportunities that we have here, and it's like, man, we need to be doing that here. We have so many opportunities. Obviously, we don't have to walk through pythons and king cobras and different scary places like this. Actually, the scariest thing of the whole trip was riding in the vehicle. So don't let anybody fool you. They drive like it's worse than New York City, but it was an awesome experience. And if you ever get that opportunity, don't let fear steal that joy from you or steal that opportunity for you. And that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Bill. Bill is going to share with us about a conversation that he had, and then Dalton will follow him.
This is a lady that we met going into one of the villages, and the father of the home was a believer, but his kids were not. So we had an opportunity to go in and share our testimonies with the father. And the daughter come in, and this is her here. And she came in and sit down and listened. She was blind, and she could kind of see out of one eye, but not real well. And it was just, I sit next to her, and the kids kept running in and out. And as we got done with our stories, we asked, is there something we could pray for you and your family for? And she spoke up real quick, and she says, I'd like to tell you my story. So we sat there, and it takes a little bit with an interpreter to get a story out. But she started off saying that when she was young, she got married, and her husband and her had two kids. But her husband had left her to go to the city to find another wife. He wasn't pleased with her. So she starts crying, and it was very emotional, even for me, just to sit and listen to her tell her story. And then she said she got remarried to a man, and they had three more kids, except for her second husband was very abusive to her. And she just sat and she cried, and just tears filled the room. And she asked, could we pray for her and her situation? And she was a non-believer, but I believe when we left there that we planted the seed in her heart. She knew that prayer would help. And it was so encouraging to see and get an opportunity to go over and to share this, the gospel, with these people. You know, we wake up every day and we wonder, we start planning weeks out, you know, what are we going to do next month? We have a vacation we want to take, or we have this that we want to do next week. They wake up every day wondering what they're going to have for dinner, what they're going to do that day to survive. And we just continually, it'll be in my heart for the rest of my life to pray for these people and to continue the Bukalo tribe to continue their work there and continue to share the gospel and get the word out there so they can know that Jesus Christ was their Savior. And that's all I have to say. My son is, his story here. For those of you, my son is Dalton here. It was a big experience for him to go over and see this. And one of the things that he came out of this was the spiritual warfare that was over there. I don't know how many times we would be in the middle of the testimonies with these people and sharing our stories, and a major interruption would come, whether it be rain, geese, chickens chasing after him. Something would go on all the time. So we did a lot of prayer walking as we would go in and out of these villages, walking from one household to the next. A lot of times we would walk in quiet, just praying for the doors to be open. As we were sitting with this group here, and it was mostly the women, we couldn't get the men to come. We tried, but they were busy working. They said, well, we have to get our work done for the day. We can't come up. We were sharing the good news, really getting a crowd to start to show up. And you can't really see, but in the background of one of the trees, there's a spot there where it's a man that shows up, starts his chainsaw, right as we're in the middle of study. And that's what everybody turns to look at, and he goes to cutting the tree down right there. And it was loud. I mean, it was Steve was trying to interpret the story, and it was just everybody just, it was the distractions that happened. So everybody just kind of sit. And in fact, I believe Jen went around and told some of the young ones there that watch where that tree is going to fall, because it may fall on us. I mean, it was very distracting. But there, they don't have the things to distract like we have here. So there, it's always a spiritual distraction. I can't count up time that we didn't have some kind of a distraction, it seemed like. Whether it was a small one or a major distraction, there was always something that was almost interrupting, trying to interrupt what we were doing. But we know what that something was. But we continued to put our smiley faces on. We continued to tell our story, no matter what the distraction was. So when this happened, we just continued to tell the stories, continued to go on, and several of us just bowed our head and prayed that, Lord, let this distractions go away. And it wasn't long, the tree fell down, and some of the little kids that were all gathered around, they jumped up with their little machetes and took off and cleaned the tree up, and it got real quiet and peaceful, and we got to continue to tell our stories. The spiritual warfare there is real, and it's really hard, especially for the men, because they believe they have to go do their work, they have to provide, but they don't understand providing God's word to their family at all. And that's the one thing that I know him and I has taken a lot of talks and had on the way home with it, and that's what he kept saying was, man, this that spiritual warfare that's there is, it's real and it's hard. I don't know, you know, we wake up every day trying to look at our distractions, but their distractions are day in, day out, 24/7 and nonstop. In a totally different way than ours. So thank you for the time, and that's all I have to say about that again.
Thank you, John. We hadn't originally planned this as a trip for teens. That wasn't the original idea. But as we began to talk to some of the dads about going on the trip, and they, you know, started to say, I'd like to go, one of the things that pretty much all of them said was, I'd like to take my son, I'd like to take my daughter along on this trip. And before we knew it, we had 13-year-olds signed up to go on this missions trip halfway around the world, which prompted my daughter to call me on the phone from over there and say, Dad, are you sure about this? 13-year-olds seem really, really young. And I had the privilege of being able to say, yeah, you don't know these 13-year-olds like I do, these 14-year-olds. They turned out to be, as far as I'm concerned, I appreciate all you grown-up guys, but they turned out to be the highlight of the trip in terms of reaching into the hearts of the tribal people that were there. And so Olivia is going to talk about, I think, giving gifts and opening the door. Okay,
so most of you are probably wondering why I'm crying. It's not because I'm nervous or scared, but I'll get to that in a second. I just want to thank everyone for allowing me to go on this trip, for raising money and everything like that. We put a lot of preparation into this trip, and one of the things that they said was bring gifts for the kids in all the villages. So my sister and I got a whole bunch of bracelets together, and we brought them on the trip. This picture is me tying bracelets on to these kids' wrists. And in every village that we went to, we just had huge crowds of kids waiting to get these little things tied on their wrists. Yet it was something so small to us, like it's just a bracelet. We have so many of those. But to them, it was something so much bigger than we ever thought it could be. And as I was tying them on their wrists, their faces would just light up. They would be so happy with just this small little thing. And the parents there in the villages saw their kids' faces light up, and then their faces would light up. And I just thought it was really cool to see that these people in the villages got so happy over this small little thing. And I was thinking, this is so small, like how happy and joyful they are whenever they find out that they can have a special relationship with the creator of the world. This small little thing opened the hearts of the people in the villages, and it was really cool to see that. So, and it was really crazy. On the way over there, I actually got like the 24-hour flu kind of sickness, and I threw up 7 times on the 14-hour plane flight, and it was not fun. But lots of people were praying back in the States, and it was really cool because no one else got sick. So that's good. But most of you are probably wondering why I'm crying. And again, it's not because I'm nervous, but I really had Mia on my heart while we were out in the Philippines. It was just so cool to see her out there. We all had our dads there, and Mia was one of the strongest people out there while we were in the field. And she just really hurt my heart to see her out there, but she showed me just amazing things while we were out there. And she's so strong, and yeah, sorry. Most of you are also probably wondering why at the end of our testimonies we're saying that's all I have to say about that. But over in the Philippines, that's how you close a speech. So that's all I have to say about that.
As Olivia mentioned, we didn't just give gifts to the kids. The teenagers were involved in a whole lot more than that. And so Grant is going to come up now and share with us about what it was like sharing his testimony in a setting like that.
Well, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Grant Thompson, and I'm 13 years old. The reason I decided to go on this trip is because I felt that God was calling me to go, and so I just decided to trust Jesus and go ahead and go. I want to share a great experience I had over there with you today, and it starts out when we started prayer walking, like when we went down south, as Jay mentioned earlier. And so when we were prayer walking, we would like go through the villages and stop at each house and share our testimonies with the family that was living there, and then ask them if they had any special prayer requests. And this one day, it was like the last day we stopped. It was like we stopped prayer walking for the day, but then it started to rain, and so we decided just to go into one more house and share our testimonies with the family and try to wait out the bad weather. And as we were sharing, there was this group of kids that started gathering at the front of the door, or the doorway. And after we were done praying for that family, We decided to give out gifts, as Olivia said earlier. We picked out presents for all the kids and stuff. And we decided to give out the gifts to the kids. And these gifts weren't like anything big here that we could center in the States. But these kids, their faces would light up. And it just made me so happy to see all of them. And that is when we were giving them out. And as you could see, there's smiles on the faces. And they were just so happy. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
One of my favorite parts about this time that we had together was that dads were together with their kids. And I spent part of my time watching the kids. I spent the rest of my time watching the dads, watching parents interact with their kids and watching them watch their kids. Tim has something to share with us about that. Tim is Grant's dad.
Hi, my name's Tim Thompson. Like Jay said, that's my son, Grant. And it was truly an amazing experience, not only for myself, but getting to watch Grant and getting to watch our other kids, who became all of our kids, while we're there watching out for each other and caring for each other. Like Jason said, there are thousands of pictures and even more moments that you wanted to record because you didn't get to get your phone out and take a picture of every moment that you wanted to. But as we hiked, this was one that was special to me, even though there's other pictures that you would look at and think are artistically much more amazing to look at. This one's really beautiful to me. So we hiked up into this area called Gogon, and we met with the man who owns this house, who was one of the first believers in this tribe. He's very old. He's not in this picture, actually. He's sitting just off to the side. I do have pictures of him, though. So, Pizza, I'll show you pictures of him as well. He prepared some funny-looking stuff for us. He came out. This is actually, we're kind of sitting in his kitchen, which is partly outside, partly inside. But he kind of came around from the corner with that funny-looking... Yeah, it looked like a fruit. It looked kind of like a banana. After biting into it, it wasn't a fruit, though. it was more of a root than a fruit. And I took a bite. Grant cut off a little bit and took a bite and just like, which I knew I meant I was going to be eating more of that. And we enjoyed talking to him for a bit, and then we hiked on past his house up to the tribal chieftain's house, and she is pictured here. The chieftain is the lady on the far left there. Her name is Teresita, and we spoke with her for some time and prayed with her and you know, told her why we were there and talked about her and her family and what we could be, you know, praying for her, and that we were going to be having a meeting later and we'd like for them to come. And so they came. We made our way to a few other houses and then made our way back down to this house and sat down. And she brought with him that man in the ball cap who was very sick. And he just kind of stayed in that position and with that look pretty much the entire time. He had been battling some illness and was quite sick. The Bukulu tribal partners that we were there with, are also pictured. That's June in the green shirt, and one of our translators. You can see her head there. Juvie is sitting right next to Grant. And as the meeting started, we were talking with them, and then Grant had an opportunity then to share his testimony. And I took the picture, so I'm sitting kind of off to the side, and you know, God just brought it to mind. Wow, look at this. Look at, you know, here we have, only He can arrange, you know, these times and these opportunities where He can use, you know, a 13-year-old kid from the kid from the middle of Missouri speaking truth into the life, you know, of an Okta tribal member, a tribal chieftain, and encouraging the hearts, you know, of these former headhunter missionaries. He can use anyone, and he does, and this picture's proof. And I was just, like all of us, so proud of the work and the hard work and the preparation that Olivia mentioned, and the kids, all the kids' hearts for sharing and being willing to be used by God, because if you're willing to be used, He will use you. And it's an amazing experience. And so we really appreciate your prayers. And that's all I have to say about that.
You went with us in ways that you may not realize. You were there from the start in gathering together to gather funds and other things to send us, and we were well aware of the fact that you were keeping up with us on Facebook and other posts. And we also knew that there was a prayer chain started, that when things started to become iffy, word went around and folks were praying, and we so much appreciate that. And Claire said that she wanted to talk a little bit about that.
So this picture kind of describes the power of prayer here. This is all the kids that went on the trip. It's the Hagans and a couple other teens that were from Kansas. And it was really cool to get a really amazing bond with those kids. We had at least one kid in every grade from eighth grade all the way to freshman in college. And you really couldn't tell. Like, sometimes you would think that age difference would like separate us out, but we all really like connected really well, and that was really amazing to see. But a big part of these 2 weeks was prayer. It was happening all over the world and for one cause, and that was really amazing to think about, especially for me. I was constantly reminded of God's love and power as we hiked 5 to 10 miles through the mountains every day, pretty much. We were in just continuous prayer the entire time, and I know that all of you guys were, and that's really amazing. So thank you for that. Jen described to us the idea of prayer walking one of the first days that we went down south to talk to the Okta. And basically, it's what it sounds like. People have talked about it already. It's walking through these villages and just praying for these people, praying for the tribals and for us as we shared our stories. At first, I kind of realized that it was hard to keep my mind focused on praying. Like we've talked about, there was a lot of distractions. And it was hot and humid. And you know, our feet were muddy, and there was just so many things that could have kept us from being in prayer and focusing on God. But that was an amazing thing too, is just that we could all tell, like, it was quiet as we were walking, and a couple times we all prayed together before we would walk in a house. And Jen talked about that too. She said whenever they would pray before other groups that had come, they would see the difference. And the fact that we just took on that from the beginning and just prayed hard from the beginning, and we could really tell the difference. Bill told the story about the palm tree. That was a little rough, one of the biggest distractions that we had that day. I didn't even think they would have electric chainsaws, but apparently they do. I mean, the middle of the jungle. I don't know. I was just surprised. It was a lot louder than I would have thought. So yeah, basically we were prepared to sprint away if the tree was going to fall in our direction. So about those 5 minutes as the tree was cutting down, we were praying pretty hard. So really glad that it didn't fall that way. But yeah, we talked about the distractions were still there, but we pushed through them. We stayed focused on our mission and what we came to do. God used each one of us in a different way, all the kids and all the adults. It was just really awesome for us to see. I also realized that we had people here in the States. I've talked about that. Thank you guys so much for praying. It means so much and way more than you could think about. When I thought about prayer before this trip, I didn't really think of it as that big of a deal. It was hard to imagine a couple of words that I said to God as making any difference. But on this trip, I really realized that it made all of the difference. So even as we're back in the States, the Hagen specifically asked us that we would continue to pray for the Bukola missionaries and for the Okta that were there. So we asked that you guys would continue to pray for them, just like you did as we were gone. We want to pray for the Hagens and the Bukola missionaries. So that's all I have to say about that.
You've probably caught on already to the fact that things didn't always go as smoothly as we had planned. Our daughter Jennifer is a world-class planner. I give her all the credit for everything that went well. But we had a couple days when, you know, things like rain would happen that we couldn't anticipate. We couldn't fix. There were a couple days, as I mentioned earlier, that we went without lunch, and that was nobody's fault. It was just that was the way the day unfolded. We had a lot of fun and became family together, but there were obstacles that required us to be courageous, to stay in it and to stay with it and to finish strong. And that's what Mia wants to talk to us about.
All right, so in that picture over there, this was our first day, and that's me and one of our other friends jumping off a bridge. And I promise I've got a point to that. But I want to thank God a lot for just giving me the courage and strength just to go to the Philippines. And before I went, I was really nervous about speaking in front of all the people and telling my story to them, because I really don't like public speaking in the first place. And then there's telling these people my story. But that was the whole point, so I'm really glad that I was able to get that out. And I sound awful because I've got strep throat right now, so sorry about that. And on our first day, so we were under the bridge, but we started out on the rocks next to it, and we were just kind of all introducing ourselves to each other and going through about what the trip was going to be like. And then it starts pouring down rain, so this is our first time the weather is going to get in the way. And so we were just under the bridge talking, and then we were up in the clouds, it was the House of the Clouds that we were staying at that day, and there were no showers there. And so we all took a river bath. And then afterward, we were all on top of the bridge, and everyone's just jumping off of it. And I have a super big fear of heights, even more that I feel like my public speaking. But so I was on top of the bridge. We were like the last two kids to go. And I like hear everyone like keep counting down for me. I was like, wait, count again, because I didn't want to. And then I know I watched the video again a couple of times, and Jay said that like the fun's always on the other side of the fear. And Alyssa is the girl I was jumping with, and she told me that I just needed to trust God because his hands were waiting at the bottom. I was like, dang, don't guilt trip me into this. So then we counted down from 10, and I finally jumped off of it, and it felt like 3 hours falling down. It was one of the scariest things that I've ever done, but it was also really fun. But when I was at the bottom, I was like, oh my gosh, I just did that. And like, I felt like God gave me the strength to like get over that fear to do that. And at that point, we have not shared our stories yet to anybody. And I was like, if God can like give me the courage to overcome that fear and the strength to, then like I can get over my fear of talking to these people about my story. And then I was gonna do all right. Because before we went, I was like, I thought I was gonna like say the wrong thing, or I was gonna mess it up, or I was gonna talk too fast, or I just thought nothing was gonna go right when I tried to do that. But God was there for me, and he just allowed me to get past that. And I don't think I could have done that at all without him. And the rest of the people over here, like especially the kids, I feel like that it's kind of a hard thing for everybody to do. And God just gave everybody the strength that they needed to use us as tools, because we couldn't have done this without God with us and by our side.
This is where I have something of a confession to make. Andrea, are you here? I announced to the group, right there she is hiding with her phone. I announced to the group right after she jumped off the bridge that no pictures or videos were to be posted to Facebook, because we were going to get her home in one piece, and then she was going to tell you that she had jumped off a bridge. And I had the privilege of being there at the moment when she said to her mom, "I jumped off a bridge," and I don't think you appreciated exactly. It was a long way up, I'm just saying. She did come to me for permission, though, and I said, yes, but don't tell your mom. That's kind of how that went. And now we had to tell you, and, you know, forgive me for that. She is an awesome young lady, Andrea. What? Yes, just see, actually, that's Sophia, her little sister, who, as we were leaving, ran over and hugged me and said, "You protect my sister with your life." So I was really more concerned about Sophia getting back and saying, "Yeah, we don't know where Mia is." I had a chance to help her, but I was busy with other things, and now we didn't want to go there. You figured out already that an awful lot of this happened in the context, in tribal context. That's where we were. We were there breaking ground, but we weren't breaking ground all on our own or for ourselves. We were partnering with some former headhunters who now are sending out missionaries, and that's what Brian wants to talk to us about.
Again, like everybody else has said, I want to say thank you for sending us, for assisting us, for praying, both before and while we were gone. Thank you so much. It made all the difference in the world. The group of people that you see in this photo are the Buklot missionaries who have left their families and homes up north and have moved down south into Agta territory and are living very, very simple lives for the sake of the gospel. Some of them are not pictured here because they're on furlough, but these people are the real heroes, I believe, of the trip. God, of course, is the ultimate hero for providing salvation. But these are the messengers that work tirelessly day in and day out, and have some of them for years in this area. And that's the reason the gospel has spread as it was. We visited some areas where there are churches established among the Agta, that if you knew who the Agta were, you would not believe. That tribal group is so timid, so shy, such low self-esteem. In fact, the word Agta is a name that they don't even prefer to go by, because it's similar to the word we would use, calling someone a moron or something along that line. It's just a word that they do not like. So their self-esteem is very low. But these men and women have given their lives to them because they believed in the gospel. When they discovered the gospel, when the Buklot discovered the gospel and really began to see the truth of it, their hearts were overflowing, and they said, "We've got to tell someone else," which is, of course, what we're all called to do. And they had a heart for the Agta. So these men and women are the heroes of the trip. We were so privileged to serve alongside them and serve them as they took us from house to house, from village to village, and showed us the work that they had done with God's help. And it was amazing to see the progress of the gospel from these few people and their dedication to the Lord. And as we talk about prayer, it's kind of been a sub-theme of everything we've talked about. This is the group of people I'd say we should be praying for. They're so faithful. They have so many obstacles to overcome, spiritual and physical obstacles. Many of the places they go are remote, and they have to hike and walk. And it was funny because us middle class, from their perspective, lazy white people just couldn't keep up. I mean, some of the places we had to climb and go to were just like insane. And it was funny because Filipinos are not very tall, typically, and there were few places where we had to climb a pretty steep incline, and they had carved out in the mud some steps, but the steps were like this tall instead of, you know, so I'm thinking, well, they're not very tall, why are the steps? It doesn't matter. They were able to climb and walk with ease. In fact, there were several places they didn't take us because they thought it would be too hard for us. We couldn't make it, which was probably true. But they worked so hard, so tirelessly, for the sake of the gospel, because they love the Lord. And it was such a joy to work alongside them and serve them while we serve the Lord. So thank you again for allowing us to go and share and be in prayer for these missionaries as they continue their work to preaching the Octa.
Everybody that's spoken has shared a piece or an aspect of where we were, and I have to tell you, we haven't done a very good job of actually filling you in on what happened while we were over there, and there's just no way that we can explain all that happened, not only in the hearts of the people that we went to, but in our hearts as well. Five of the team members came from a church in Wichita. We met one another there at the airport in Kansas City before we left, and we were all reflecting on the fact that we felt like when we got back to Kansas City and now we're all going our separate ways, it felt like leaving family behind. There's a picture before. Is there a picture before this one or after this one? Okay, but God spoke not only to us, but through us. He worked not only through us, but in us during our time that we were there, and cemented us together as a family. I love that picture because pretty much all of the Bukalot missionaries are there in there, as well as the team that you sent over and the team that went from Wichita. I think one of the guys is missing. He had a fever that day. We got together in the training center that was built by the team that went 2 years ago, and had communion together as well as some fellowship. But if you could just go back to that picture that was up there just a moment ago, that one right there. I just want to call special attention to that gentleman right there. His name is Badi, and he's the wealthiest Agda man that I have ever met. He has a very nice house, and we were able to sit in his little gazebo thing and talk together. But as we went in, Sherwin, who is the man that's going to be doing the teaching there in that area, this was a brand new area where the gospel had not yet been. The first of the stories were told today on the 30th of July, 2017. The first of the stories that will lead them to the point where they have an opportunity to hear the gospel. This gentleman here is named Badi, and as we were on the way in, Sherwin stopped the group and turned to me and said in Bukalot, Uncle, I really feel like you need to be the one to talk to this man. There were things that he didn't tell me about this guy that I'll try to think to share later, but there were things that he didn't tell me about this guy, and as we were going in, he stopped and said, Jay, Uncle, you should be the one. And so I said, well, you know, the rest of the team won't get any translation, because in the back to English, we went from Bicolano to Bukalo to English so that everybody could hear what was going on. And Sherwin said, nonetheless, it really needs to be you. And so I said, okay. We gathered around in that little gazebo there, and I was going to start the conversation, but he preempted me. This gentleman here, Badi, did, and said, I need to know something before you say anything else. I said, what? He said, you know, they're talking about doing a Bible study here. And I need to know right now, before I say anything else about that, are you just bringing us another religion? Is that what this is? And I could tell by his tone, he was saying, because we don't need another religion. We've got religions all over the place here. if you're just bringing us another religion, then we're not interested. And I had the privilege then of talking to him about a relationship with God the Father that comes to us through Jesus Christ by his death, and had the chance to share the gospel with him. We talked about the fact that God requires perfection. And I know that some of you are here for the first time this morning, and so we want to take this opportunity. But we talked about the fact that God requires perfection, and you know, I can't. I told on you while I was there talking to him. I didn't want to make him guilty right away, and so I said, the people in my country, we're a mess. We just are. I've yet to meet a perfect person in the United States of America. And I confessed to him that I wasn't perfect either, and so I said, sir, he was 66 years old, which, you know, blended well with my 60 years. And I said to him, I didn't even know how to ask you this question, but can I ask you this? Are you perfect? Your life, as you look back on it, are you perfect? He smiled and he said, you know, from what I understand, there are 10 commandments. And I said, yes. He said, I've broken 11. I said, okay, well, then we are on the same page, you know? Because God is requiring perfection, but none of us can produce it, and so we're lost. We're hopeless. We're helpless. So I went on to say that, buddy, you're going to die because of your sin. That's the punishment for sin. You're going to die because of your sin. You're going to be punished because of your sin, and so am I. We're all born destined for that, but I have good news. You're supposed to die for your sin, but Jesus died for you. He died in your place. You're supposed to be punished for your sin, but Jesus was punished in your place. We got to the end of that time, and the hour that we had set aside to be there was finished, and all of these people, all of these English speakers that were sitting there had been so patient and had been praying that entire time. Every now and again, I caught one of their eyes and just said, because of a particular moment that had come. Got to the end of that time, and he said, you know, I have a brother who died in March. Well, I know a tribal man from the village of Buhi over Ipil on Lake Buhi that I've known for years up there in Agda, named Manuel, who died in March. And so I began to wonder, where are we going with this? And I said, well, where did he live? And he said, he lived in Ipil on along Lake Buhi. I said, well, what was his name? He said, Manuel was his name. I said, I can hardly believe this. I said, way back in 2010, I had lunch in your brother's house before he heard these stories, before he heard the good news. And I have had lunch in your brother's house since then, every time I visit Ipil. And even just yesterday, even though your brother has passed away, we met in his house and had lunch there. And he was quiet for a minute, and he said, you know, my brother told me, he told me several times that there was something that he wanted to talk to me about, something very important, something that meant something to him, and he passed away before we were able to get together. And I said, I am absolutely certain I know what it is. It is these stories that Sherwin and Donna are going to come up and tell over the next few weeks. They're going to talk to you about Creator God and how all of that unfolded. And they have good news for you, buddy. I am absolutely confident that that is what your brother wanted to tell you. You have to attend these meetings. And so I said, from one old man to another, you have to go to these meetings. From one imperfect man to another, you have to go to these meetings. And for the sake of your brother who loved you, you have to go to these meetings. He turned to Sherwin then and said, I want you to have these meetings here at my home. And I didn't find out until later that Sherwin had talked to him just last week, just the week before. And he told Sherwin, yeah, I'm really not interested. I don't want to hear anything that you have to say. I won't be attending these meetings. And now God has used this group of people, this team right here, to speak into his heart to get to the point where he wants to not only listen to the teaching, but have it at his home. And feel free to invite other people. We got up to go, and it was Bobby who said, we need to take a picture. This is an important moment, he said. We need to take a picture. And I said, that would be great. He turned to me right before we took this picture and said, My brother used to be your best friend up here. Now I am your best friend up here. And so I said to him, I said, Buddy, you listen to the teaching. And I'll come back and we'll visit and we'll talk again after you've heard the truth. The world today, there are still about 2,200 tribal groups like this particular group, like the Agta, that have yet to hear. There are some 6,500 individual people groups around the world that have yet to hear the good news. For Badi and the people in this village and this area, the people that live with him, his daughter is over here. He's got a daughter and a granddaughter in this group here. The Sherwin and Dona and Nora went up just today, July 30th, 2017, and began to talk to this group about in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth so that they can lead through the stories to the time when they're able to say, Jesus died for you. So I told them that we would be praying for them as this unfolds among this completely unreached people group. And I trust that you'll do that. We have a tradition here at the Potter's House. We think of this time together as our huddle. And we think of being out there as running the play that we discuss in the huddle while we're here on Sunday morning. And so I'm going to ask you to stand with me, if you will, as we close in prayer. We're going to stand in the presence of the King. And when I'm all done, I'm going to say ready, and you're going to say break. And if that doesn't make any sense to you, it's only because you're here for the first time. And so we'll just trust that you understand it's the way we close things here at the Potter's House on Sunday morning. Would you join me in the presence? Our Father and our God, thank you so much for these people that stand behind me. Thank you for the way that you used them, for the way that you spoke to hearts, for the way that you challenged people there in that place, both believers that were well established and new believers and even, God, people who have not heard about you, have not heard the good news about Jesus. They played a role that will be significant for all of eternity. They're standing behind me now, and thank you for them. But in front of me, God, stands a group of people who stood behind them as they went. And so we're asking that you would bring your blessing on this church, on these people who have been so faithful to you in this pursuit. And God, we ask that you would take the feeble and weak and foolish things that we did while we were there, and that you will use it for your glory to turn it into something that is more amazing than we could ever imagine for all eternity. We pray that as the teaching goes on in that village right there, God, that hearts would be captivated by the power of the story, and that they would come to the place where they trust that Jesus has died for them, where they believe that he is their Savior. And God, when that happens, we will remember that we ask you for that, and we will thank you. Thank you for this time. Thank you for that meal that's out there. We pray, God, that you would bless the hearts of those that partake in it, and that people would feel free to just stay, whether they're new here or have been here forever. And thank you for the privilege that we have, Father, of mentioning the name of the Lord Jesus to you whenever we pray.